Hello and welcome to the Nat Coombs Show, presented by Paddy Power Fantasy, coming to you from Hard Rock Stadium in Miami. What, 30 minutes after the Kansas City Chiefs have done it again? A remarkable comeback from Patrick Mahomes and co. They looked done and dusted, but they pulled it out of the flames, and the Kansas City Chiefs are the champions after a long and exhilarating season, 100th season of the NFL. Andy Reid is finally, Nicky Banditti, got that Super Bowl ring that we all were willing him, I think, well, us neutrals anyway, willing him to get.
Yeah, it was rubbish, wasn't it? Boring game, nothing happened.
What a letdown.
Yeah, huge letdown. Oh, what an incredible ending. Absolutely with you on Andy Reid, and sometimes sort of feel like you shouldn't say these things in the name of impartiality, but it's hard not to sort of feel positively for people. It doesn't mean that you're, you know, leaning one way or the other when the game's
right,
on, but of
yeah.
course, with, you know, as a story and as an individual who just seems to bring so much warmth to his profession. Like, it's such a hard thing to explain, but I think that when you look at what he's gone through personally, obviously losing his son a few years ago,
yeah.
and then you sort of just hear from any of his players, you know, when it was at Philadelphia, it was in Kansas City, about the person that he is and the way that he is with them, and I think just the sort of environment that he brings to the sport, it seems to be, I mean, certainly a hard-working one. He's, you know, he's notorious for
yeah.
the hours that he spends.
Even by head coaching standards, he's
right.
extreme.
I don't know what time he got here today, but I know at Chiefs home games, he's sort of been known to get there at 4:30 in the morning.
Yeah,
he jokes about it, because at 4:30 in the morning, the tailgate's already going, and he, you know, talks about the burgers he smells at 4:30 in the morning. But he, you know, he has earned this. I think if there is a narrative that I really hate in sport, and certainly in this sport, it's when you have someone like Andy Reid who has won and won and won, and people will just sort of go, yes, but he won't do it in the playoffs.
Yes.
And you think, you know, how are you going to measure someone? Are you going to measure someone by, yes, you know, in those playoff games there have been some
questionable clock
time,
yeah.
early clock management. And in this game there were a couple of points where you were thinking you could do
Here
better on it.
Yeah.
But I mean, the idea that he wasn't a Hall of Fame coach before this, the idea
yeah.
that he wasn't one of the absolute best that the NFL's ever had, the idea that somehow this was a character flaw in him,
yes.
not winning in the playoffs. I mean, look, up until now, he's had some quarterbacks who are serviceable quarterbacks, right? Donovan McNabb's a serviceable quarterback. Alex Smith is a serviceable quarterback, although he never looked as good as anyone else he did with Andy Reid.
Right.
This is the first time Andy Reid has had a really great quarterback, and guess what? It's the first time Andy Reid has won a Super Bowl.
I think all of that is fair. Maybe with McNabb, I'd say, well, I'd put him on a level above Alex Smith, but I take your point,
yeah,
not on the same level,
but I mean,
as Mahomes.
Donovan McNabb, I think if you wanted to point the finger at someone for not winning that Super Bowl, it was Donovan McNabb a long way before it was Andy Reid.
Sure, yeah, well, exactly. This is where the point when it goes out of your hands, and we'll get into that when we talk
yeah.
about Carl Shanahan and his play calling, and when things were very much in his hands, and it's out of a coach's hands, and in it has to rely on the players executing, and that, of course, that Super Bowl, 3 points, such a fine margin, and McNabb said, you know, all the story about, was he ill, was, you know, was there contributing factors to what went wrong? You're right, it was McNabb who ultimately could have won the game.
It wasn't the play calling.
It was the execution.
They had the opportunities
yeah.
to win that game. Over and over again, they had
yeah.
the opportunities to win that game.
So, Reid finally gets it done. And I completely agree with you that doing it in the Super Bowl, in this particular year, in the way that he did, the team that he's built, is incredibly special. But
we have to talk about Mahomes now. I'm sorry. Like, I'm sat here and, like, we're talking about Reid, and it's a lovely story. But, like, the last few minutes of that game, that's the Mahomes. Like, that's what we've been waiting for. Like, that's...
Did you doubt... Was there any point that you thought, okay, because we were talking on the live broadcast we were
yeah.
doing about this is possibly the worst performance we've seen Patrick Mahomes ever have. And this wasn't a solitary opinion. This seemed to be a
yeah.
collective opinion. The 49ers were phasing him, were getting to him. They were executing the game plan defensively perfectly. The front four were getting that pressure quickly. It was enabling, or rather preventing, the Chiefs getting those man mismatches they wanted to. Everything was going to plan, pretty much. And he looked rattled.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that the pressure, of course the pressure was there, but I think what was striking about it is that even when he wasn't under pressure early in the game, he was just throwing the ball off target.
Yeah.
He was just throwing poorly. And Of course.
Because do you think his rhythm was being disrupted because of the speed of the front four?
Of course. I'm not trying to sort of take away what San Francisco were doing, because San Francisco had great schemes. They had good pressure quickly. I mean, the very first pass is tipped by Bosa, and that sets tone.
Yeah.
But I just feel like you then turn it around and you look at what happens in those last few minutes. And, I mean, there were a couple of plays on those last, I mean, not the last drive, but, you know, the two drives that turned it around, where it's that Mahomes thing of, well, he's there, and then he's not anymore. He dematerializes, like, in the pocket, and then he's
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
And that's the difference. That's what Mahomes is. That's why Mahomes isn't Donovan McNabb, isn't just another good quarterback. He's Patrick freaking Mahomes.
Yeah.
And I just,
And that clutch run as well.
I was worried about it, because, like, you know, actually, like, I had a very specific parallel that I think hasn't been talked about that much this week. Maybe it has a bit, but in all the sort of talking about Mahomes, there's been this presumption that he's going on to have this great, great career.
Like, yeah.
There's been a presumption, I think, even if he lost this game, he's still going to be back here soon enough.
Yeah.
But there's, like, this parallel that started to feel so vivid to me in this game, in this stadium of all stadiums, with Dan Marino.
Right.
Like, so Dan Marino, in his second year as a starter, like Patrick Mahomes, goes to the Super Bowl. He's won a league MVP.
Yeah.
He's thrown for 5,000 yards and 48 touchdowns. You know, last season, Mahomes threw for 5,000 yards and 50 touchdowns. Yeah. Both of them, like, these record-breaking in the same way. And when that second interception happens, go back and check Marino's that one Super Bowl. He basically got in a hole in the second half through two interceptions, and that was it. That was the story.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, this is literally history repeating itself. But it didn't, because to an extent that even someone as great as Marino wasn't, like, Mahomes is just uncontainable for a whole game, it feels like. And I said this all week, like, I just, whatever happens, win or lose for the Chiefs, I can't see it not being a close game, because Mahomes simply won't be contained for the whole game. And I got to the point in this game where I no longer believed it. I thought it was over.
Yeah.
And then it starts, and once it starts, I mean, it's easy, and you can do this with every Super Bowl. I mean, you can do this with all of Tom Brady's six Super Bowls. You can point to individual plays and go, well, actually, like, we've sort of painted it as this inevitable narrative, but you take this one play and
things
could look different. And the Travis Kelce pass interference in the end zone, of course.
Yeah.
But didn't it just feel like the air had changed already? Like, something had, inside this stadium, the 49ers were drowning. Like, it was happening. Like, it was going away from underneath them. And that was Mahomes. As far as I'm concerned, that was Mahomes.
He had a little help from his friends, of course, as well. And I think Damian Williams could feel aggrieved, if that's not overstating it, to not be named MVP. Certainly he had a shout at that. Sammy Watkins as well stepped up when it counted.
Well, I mean, about two quarters in, maybe not two quarters, but midway through the second quarter of this game, I'm thinking Bashaun Breeland's going to be the MVP.
Sure.
You know, like, the first drive he makes is, I thought, low-key, will be forgotten about. Unbelievable play to get off George Kittle's block and go and gobble up a screenplay that could have gone somewhere. Then he gets the interception, and I sort of felt like journalist hat on. I'm like looking around the stadium and thinking how many people in the stadium are right now going, like, what have I got to say about Bashaun Breeland if this becomes the story?
So I nabbed him at opening night on Monday, so I'd have been fine.
Did you?
There you go.
But, you know, like, a guy, and that's, you know, that, I mean, that actually cuts to the core of this sport, because, you know, and I'm guilty of it, I've just done it. Like, we have, I think it was in all the sort of billing of this game, you know, it was almost like you were putting one man, Mahomes, against a team.
Yeah.
Like, that was the narrative.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, this is a man and this is a team. And, of course, it isn't really that, because, of course, they're not in the game if there aren't all these other players on the field and doing these things. And you're right. I think in many ways, when we take a step back and look in a detached way, you might say, should the MVP go to someone who for 3.5 quarters was fundamentally not good?
Yes.
Just because for the last half of a quarter, he was brilliant. I mean, I might still say yes, because what is most valuable? What's most valuable is your quarterback can deliver when he absolutely has to.
So that means
But Damian Williams had a better game all around. Like, he did a better, you know, he was a more steady performer, I think you could say.
Yes, no doubt. Following your logic through then, if you look at that the microcosm of that versus Eli Manning's career, that means Eli Manning is a definite Hall of Famer.
Well, I mean, no, it's not.
No, but I agree.
It's different to, that's, I mean, is you it? Know, this is, I mean, this is a semantic thing that we can get into, but most valuable player, what does that mean? Most valuable. And that's why I actually really dislike it as an award, because in my mind, most valuable player, it's almost baked in. It's going to be a quarterback.
Yes.
9 times out of 10.
Yeah.
Because they're the player who touches the ball most. That's just as simple as that. Like, they, you know, they are the most valuable.
Well, speaking of which, if this is not too cute, a segue onto the 49ers offense and Jimmy Garoppolo, who did get to see the ball a hell of a lot more than he had in the last couple of games. And again, we're talking of big narratives going into this week. And you're right, Mahomes was the headline act. And that is it not to be underestimated when you're talking about the magnitude of Super Bowl week. You know, to be the main event individually in a week like this, that takes some going. Garoppolo, of course, all week long, for all the wrong reasons, was getting a lot of attention, inevitably being compared and contrasted unfavorably. And there was, I think, a fairly divided opinion about this. There was a camp, probably the majority of people saying, look, he's not up to it. At the end of the day, he's not up to marshalling a team when they need him to do that, exactly as you've brilliantly described the way Mahomes did. And it's not fair maybe to compare him to Mahomes, because I don't think there are many quarterbacks like Mahomes, but he's not even close to being able to do that. Then the flip side of that, where people are saying, hang on a minute, look at the numbers, look at his career as a 49er in totality. Injury notwithstanding, he's had a terrific record. He has shown comeback wins, shootout wins. He can air the ball if he needs to. This idea that he is going to be out of his depth if the 49ers need to rely on him is an acute example of recency bias.
Yeah, of course.
What do you make of Garoppolo's performance? Because he's getting a lot of criticism, and clearly there were moments of the Sanders miss, which I think was, and Ollie, our producer, was saying before we started recording this, that was the moment in the game changed its trajectory. If that had connected and they had scored, they probably would have gone on and won it, and that was on Garoppolo. So
yeah, that's a great point.
He had technical shortcomings, but at the same time wasn't really necessarily helped by most of his colleagues, and certainly his coach, in the same way Mahomes was.
Well, I mean, well, I'd be interested to hear what you think on the coach specifically, because I think that for a lot of this game, I would have said that Kyle Shanahan is winning. You know, Kyle Shanahan is, I mean, they were literally winning, but he was, you know, he was coming up with the smarter offensive play calls, the sort of the repeated uses of reverses to good effect. But I mean, on Garoppolo, I think the problem is the same problem that has sort of hung over him this whole season, which is so many things he does well, and I don't think his performance was sort of universally bad here, but he has these moments of inaccuracy that are quite uncomfortable.
Quite jarring.
Like, yeah.
And totally inconsistent with a lot of the way he plays, or the way he plays a lot of the time.
Exactly. Like, and some, you know, I mean, the brilliant interception is, you know, is disrupted. It's, it's not completely just a clean throw, but some of those throws you look at and think, you really shouldn't, you just shouldn't be making that throw. You should be better than that. You are better than that. And
he's still, you know, we forget he's still a relatively inexperienced quarterback. Yeah. I know that might be a slightly absurd argument when we've talked about Mahomes in the manner that we have. But again, I guess we're talking about Mahomes here, at once in a generation star.
Yeah, I mean, it is an unfair comparison. And, you know, yes, recency bias and getting caught up in it. I do believe that Mahomes is something really special.
Yeah.
And by the way, so was Dan Marino. Dan Marino, despite never winning a Super Bowl, despite never going to another one, was still an incredible player.
Well, it goes back to our point right at the top about Andy Reid, right? I mean, Marino is probably post tonight, you know, the player arguably closest to the Andy Reid argument. Of course, as you rightly say, he's a Hall of Fame coach. He's a Hall of Fame player just because he didn't win a ring. Okay, back to your question about Shanahan. And I think it's a fair point you make. I think, and again, I'm not talking in, I hope I wasn't kind of coming across in too binary terms saying he had a bad night, but clearly 49ers fans are frustrated with a couple of things specifically. The first, I think, was how he handled the situation before halftime.
Yeah.
And I actually think in that respect, I kind of understand his caution there. He knew he was getting the ball back, and he thought, if we have a quick three and out here, think Ross Tucker, our friend, was making this point on social media, if memory serves me, in the blur of the last four or five hours. But if he'd if they'd gone three and out quickly, then Reed would have had the Chiefs had a shot at getting something on the board before half time, which would have been entirely the wrong momentum killer to go into the locker room with. But it was really towards the end of the game when he seemed to deviate from what had been successful for the majority of the season. And again, not just obsessing about what happened in the last two games, but they ran the ball, I think, second most in the entire NFL. This is what worked. And he seemed to move away from that. If you compare it to the Houston Super Bowl, which inevitably we are, right? And what happened then? There was the general consensus about that Super Bowl is that as the Falcons coordinator, he was overtly conservative in the final stages of the game, in the fourth quarter of the game. But there was one moment when he wasn't, when he forced the issue and tried to put the Patriots completely to bed and called a play, because this was very, very typical of how he'd been slicing and dicing teams all season long. And Matt Ryan took the sack, got them out of field goal range. And to me, that was almost more of a concern, well, as significant, I should say, than what happened after that and the overt conservatism that came in. So it was in his head definitely again this time around, I think. I think he was doing the opposite this time. He was, rather than saying, no, we're going to run the ball because that's how we've got here, he did the opposite. Now, you can overanalyze these things, and it would be very interesting to see when we get a chance to analyze stuff again and watch game film again, and when our emotions are a bit calmer, try and work out and listen to what he's got to say about that as well. But right now, Nikki, the 49ers fans are really frustrated with their coach and the plays that he called towards the end of the game.
Yeah, and I mean, this does enter into that territory of damned if you do and damned if you don't, because I think that a criticism that has been easy to level at everyone who's played Kansas City, certainly in this playoff run, in case people forget, you know, the Chiefs have trailed by double digits in every game so far in this playoff run. In fact, according to NFL research, they're the first team to win a Super Bowl after doing that in every game in the postseason. Like, it's a thing. And I think that you've certainly heard the criticism after those defeats for the Texans and for the Titans. Oh, you know, you needed to put your foot on the neck. You needed to sort of drive it home, because you know that the Chiefs sooner or later are going to score points.
Yes.
And so I can see why Shanahan, I can see how you get into a headspace of second guessing yourself. You know, if we run the ball here and run it three times and that's it, and we have to give the ball back,
yeah,
then we're going to get killed for not taking a shot at trying to force the issue.
Yeah.
But I mean, I am still inclined to agree with you that, yeah, you do what you're doing well, and that has been what they've been doing well. I think that was sort of the great mystery, though, coming into this game, was how much is Garoppolo being held back deliberately because they don't trust him?
Yes.
And how much is it just no?
Yeah.
When you've got Raheem Mostert rushing for 300 yards on his own, you don't need to bother.
Right.
But, yeah, with hindsight, and it's always with hindsight, it's easy to look at that and go, maybe they should have.
In terms of experience at the Hard Rock Stadium, and you and I have covered quite a few games over the years, and latterly, of course, particularly in typically brand new state-of-the-art stadiums, bigger than this, all new and shiny, and you know, the Hard Rock's seen a number of incarnations, and it's certainly not rough around the edges, but it's a different kind of feel, isn't it? Smaller, more intimate.
I tell you what it feels right now, which has caught me off guard, is it feels really flipping cold, Matt.
Yeah.
I wasn't ready for that. I thought
a jacket.
Miami weather was going to stay warm all night, and it's not. Yeah, it is a different vibe. It's got a very particular, I don't know, and I mean this as a good thing, because I think this is always a trait that I like in the stadium. It feels very Miami.
Yeah.
I think Miami has a certain, I'm not going to be able to express this as well as I want to, but I can almost say it like a certain faded glory to
it. Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It has this sort of, I don't know, it's almost a look in the colours, which is this, everywhere, you know, in town, it's got this sort of salmon pink and green going on that feels kind of dated.
Yes.
Like at some point you were like, at some point this was, you know, new cool, whereas now it's like, it's still cool because it's harkening back to something that
was cool.
It's
got a kitsch factor, yeah, nostalgia factor.
And I think the stadium reflects that. I think that's the best way I can describe it. It's not, you know, if I was to make my list of my stadiums that I most want to be in the NFL, it's probably not number one, but it's got a charm to it. It's got an appeal. It's definitely not a bad place to have a Super Bowl. It's a nice place to have a Super Bowl.
And we're looking out now. We're still up high in the press box, and the stadium's emptied out. All the fans, the press are still here. Some of them anyway, finishing off their work, and a lot of people still on the field. The glitter, the confetti strewn all over the place, and milling around. And I would say there's maybe a thousand odd still here doing their thing, and press conferences going on down below, of course. And the post-mortem as far as the 49ers are concerned, and the celebration as far as the Chiefs are concerned, will roll on into the night. And of course, early doors tomorrow, the press conferences, what are they, usually about half eight, 8:45?
An ungodly hour. I need to know that because I'm supposed to be there.
Yeah,
and
right.
The answer is I don't know. I'm at that point where I'm like, yeah, I'll have to get back into my room and check where I'm supposed to be in the morning, which of course will be nevertheless less of a pain in the morning, I imagine, than for Mahomes himself, who I don't doubt, as is often the case, will not have gone to bed by the time we...
Unlikely.
By the time we do the press conference.
I think it's unlikely.
I always wonder if that's why they do it that way. If it's just like, you know what, they're going to go out and have a nice time, and you don't want to organise it for midday, because at that point they really would have run out of steam and want to go to bed.
Yeah. Or
whereas if you just
really
do it first
steaming,
thing,
yeah,
like, they're just still going to be up the night before. Because it's, I mean, it's an annual tradition. Like, the guys show up, the head coach and the MVP, and they are always looking very much like two people who have not returned to bed since the game.
Yeah, what I always, I wonder what the scenes tomorrow as well, with Andy Reid maybe not, but Pete Carroll definitely did this, and I think pretty much everyone drives the, I'm already thinking about next season, like, with only, you know, only the half jokey, like, you probably are already thinking about
well,
next
they
season.
Might be. I mean, I really hope that they're also thinking about what they're going to go back to in Kansas City. I have to say, this is, you know, I'm sure a lot of listeners already know this. Some who know me will, some who won't, some who don't won't. But I lived in Missouri for a couple of years. Missouri, by the way, is the home state for the Kansas City Chiefs. I believe that the President of the United States got that wrong in a tweet that he sent out right after the game, congratulating the people of Kansas, which is a different state.
Incredible.
For those who don't know the geography, Kansas City sort of straddles two states, but the stadium, the team, is based on the Missouri side. So I lived in Missouri, and I have sort of some connection still to that place, and you know, Kansas City is a great, it's a great NFL city. Like it's a city that loves this sport and this team, that has weathered half a century waiting for this return to this game. That you know, you could go to games there when it was at a much much lower ebb, and still have found the stadium full and the tailgate absolutely thriving on game day.
Yeah,
there's going to be a good celebration going on back there right now, I imagine, and I'm pretty sure there'll be a big one coming when they get back there as well.
The fans were absolutely brilliant tonight, I thought. I mean, really.
I mean, I thought it was a real moment at the beginning of the game, and again, people who've seen games at the Chiefs Stadium will know this, but during the National Anthem, Chiefs fans will always end it by going, and the home of the Chiefs.
Yeah.
And there's something about that happening at a Super Bowl, because it's that line of, like, it's amazing, like, fan culture. But also, this is a country that, you know, has a very high value placed on patriotism. And I always wonder if some people are going to be quite upset by that.
Yes,
And so it happening in a Super Bowl was quite something.
Yeah, it's a really good point.
I have to say, I really enjoyed it. But of course, you know, I'm not American and don't have any attachment to that anthem, so I don't know if some people would feel differently.
It was definitely a moment that was, okay, these guys are really kind of struck home that how much they're outnumbering the 49ers fans as well. I mean, which was impossible to tell.
Because everyone's wearing red.
But I reckon, well, heavily Chiefs. Yeah. It wasn't just they were the most vocal. And I thought this all week, actually, just rolling around, that it felt like there were more Chiefs fans here, but you can be surprised then. And well, 49ers fans coming in late, by the look of it, the Chiefs fans were outnumbering them, both in terms of numbers and vocally as well.
It was definitely vocally. It was very much the feel of a Chiefs home game. Of course, the longer the game went on with the Chiefs in a difficult spot, you know, the 49ers fans were here, they were still making noise, they got louder. But I thought that at the beginning, and I wondered how much of an impact it could have. And the game went in a way that it didn't seem to be having an impact, but maybe it did at the end. Maybe at the end, when San Francisco, you know, needed to stop the slide.
Yeah.
This place was loud.
Yeah,
it was.
It was
really, really loud.
Yeah.
The Chiefs, again, you know, not to harp on it, but Arrowhead is, there was a time where it was like this sort of ongoing story because someone kept going and measuring, but it was back and forth with Seattle for the loudest stadium,
yeah,
not just in the NFL, but like loudest sports stadiums in the world, they were sort of ranking them against. And Arrowhead is, it shouldn't be, it's like an outdoor stadium, it's kind of a bowl, but it's loud. These are loud fans.
Great story that Ollie was showing me via Jason Kander, the journalist. A few weeks back, Mahomes and his girlfriend were having dinner at a pizza place near their home. Everyone recognized them, but nobody interrupted them during the meal. They paid the bill, went to leave, and nobody was jumping up and asking for a selfie or an autograph or anything. Mahomes apparently stopped at the door, turned back, and everyone looked up, and he said to the whole restaurant, "Thanks for letting us enjoy our dinner. This is why I love Kansas City. You guys are awesome." After he left, it was revealed that he'd paid for everybody. Well, they'd paid for everybody's bill.
No way.
What a legend.
That's cool.
What a legend.
I mean, he has got... It's exciting. Like, I know we've already talked about him, but just, you know, just to reiterate it, like, this is exciting because we've had an incredible, incredible leak story in Tom Brady, and we've had his rivalry for a time with Peyton Manning, and these characters have dominated for so long, and we will definitely look back on those and think, wow, what a privilege to live through that era and that things. But it does get, after a while, repetitive.
Right.
And this feels like, oh, a new door has been opened.
Yeah.
This feels like the beginning of something. This feels like, okay, we've got a whole new story that's going to have, you know, years ahead of it.
And not just Mahomes, of course, in this weekend, Lamar Jackson named MVP,
yeah,
the Mahomes' successor. And so you're right, it seems to be the next generation, the now generation, certainly Patrick Mahomes tonight winning his first Super Bowl and his first MVP. You just got to wonder how many more are to come. It is the end of the 2019 season. Always strange to say that when we're into 2020. But we are rolling on all through the offseason. At least once a week we're dropping episodes. And when we get to key things like free agency and the draft, we're going to be ramping that up and dropping more stuff. Lots of video content as well. So just the time for me to wrap things up as I'm looking over the final stages of Super Bowl 54 here as people still milling about all around us. Thanks to you, Nikki. Thanks to everybody that has been on the show this season. It's been a brilliant week in Miami. We've had an absolute blast here and made a lot of new friends and really enjoyed that. And most importantly, thanks to everybody at home for supporting us, listening to the show. Those of you who've asked questions, got in touch, reacted on social media, we massively appreciate that as well. At the NC Show, and today is how you need to do that, or if you want to do that, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. And of course, none of this would have been possible without our terrific headline sponsors, Paddy Power Fantasy, with us all season long. Really appreciate their support and backing. Wouldn't be able to do it without them. So saluting you from all the way over here in Miami. How about we do it all again? Well, we will do, probably later on this week. We're dropping, definitely later on this week, dropping episode Thursday, Friday. We will work it out. We'll let you know on social, and then we're going to be dropping episodes, as I say, weekly through the off-season. So we'll see you then. Bye for now.